Okay, so thank you. So it was not really clear what the organizer wants me to talk about, so I decided to talk a little bit on 2D turbulence. And a little bit on Lagrangian transport. So they asked me to do really basics, to use basic ideas. So I will talk about the basics, about 2D turbulence, about the entropy cascade, and the energy cascade. So in the room there is people which are much more expert than me in the subject, so you should ask them questions if you don't understand. Then about Lagrangian transport, I will discuss passive scalar. Discuss about the property of Lagrangian trajectories and how the two subjects are related. I will explain why, what's the role of the zero mode, how is it linked to universality property of statistics of passive scalar on Lagrangian trajectories. Another word for zero mode is martingales, that maybe it's a word that you heard about when people talk about SLEs. And then, if I have time, I will explain why Lagrangian trajectories have an explosive property on how this is related to dissipation. Dissipation anomaly. So it would not be only on 2D turbulence. This one is on any dimension. So 2D turbulence is an example of non-equilibrium system. It's the infinite number of freedom. It's one of the rare unsolved problems of classical physics. So to describe it, we have a velocity field U of x and t in two dimensions, which is supposed to be incompressible. And then the Navier-Stokes equation is to introduce the evolution of the velocity field is governed by the Navier-Stokes equation, and a way to write it is by writing for the vorticity. We will use it because it will be the property of the vorticity is more linked to the property of Lagrangian trajectories. So you introduce the vorticity omega. And then what the Navier-Stokes equation says that the vorticity is transport, so d of omega plus u. So it means that this is a transport. And then there is a term for dissipation. And then you may have force which are used to inject energy. So the forcing is for inject energy and entropy. We define what it is, the entropy. So it takes place at some scale LF. And the dissipation plays a role at short scale. LD. LD. D like dissipation.
Scale.
Scale, oui, without a S. So it's this equation means that omega is transported by the velocity field u, but it's an active scalar. It's a pseudo-scalar. So we got it's an active scalar because the velocity is linked to the vorticity by this relation. Okay, so we are interested in the when we look at turbulence at fully developed turbulence, we are interested in the limit of large Reynolds number. So we look at the limit when the which corresponds to the limit when the viscosity goes to zero. Which is the same thing as, which may be implemented by fixing all the parameters, but nu goes to zero. I will define it. Okay. So, I may define it right now. So,
are you thinking in a finite box mostly, or?
Yeah, there is three length scale, or maybe more. So there is a large infrared length scale. Okay.
But in the units which you use, viscosity has dimension.
Yeah. So you have to. There is unit everywhere. Yeah. You want me to write all the dimension? I forget the dimension of the unit of the viscosity. But the Reynolds number is a ratio of. Don't remember. What exactly? It's the ratio between advection term over the dissipation.
Can you write it down. So
advection is that, so it's has typical velocity u. Then there's a 1 over length scale, because there is dissipation 1 over length square, it's like L, divided by nu, no? So if you fix the typical mean square velocities, and fix the typical length of the problem, when the Reynolds number goes to zero, it's the same thing as nu goes to zero. Okay?
There are already two lengths,
LD
and LF, and that's what is L?
What would be LF?
It's not a bigger
one. Yeah. That's the typical velocity at the injection scale.
Is it length scale? Looking at
LD,
is it given in terms of some of the.
Yeah, I will describe it. It would be. It's a scale below which this term is the dominant.
Right.
Okay.
Scale which you put Reynolds number and
excuse me?
If you put LD to this formula for Reynolds number instead of LF, you could get in it?
Yes.
So that means LD is related to the.
Yeah. So you will inject some energy or entropy, and LD will be the scale where. This term corresponds to the where you absorb all the entropy you inject, so you will determine it. Okay. May I discuss it later?
We assume that F is time dependent?
Yeah, F will be time dependent too. It will be random at the end, actually. So there is two quantities, so I define what the energy now is. So energy. Of the square of the velocity, and it's conserved in absence. If you forget about dissipation and forcing, this is a conserved quantity.
Okay. So that means that the Reynolds number can be written through LD and LF?
Yeah, probably.
How should we do this?
Maybe we can do it when I will have say what I don't know the formula by heart. And then I will tell you what's LD, and we will find LD. LD will involve the injection, the way you inject energy. So the Reynolds number will be, you can write it in terms of LF, in terms of nu, the injection rate, and LD. You have many ways to write it. Mm-hmm. I don't know why you insist so much on the Reynolds number. Maybe I will answer better the question if I understand why you are asking the question. Yeah, so but just we fix all the parameters and then we look at the limit where the viscosity goes to zero. Okay? But we fix all the other external parameters.
This limit
So then, entropy is also a quadratic conserved quantity. It's just the square of the vorticity, and both are conserved if there is no dissipation. And no forcing.
But
they're going to
notion.
Yeah, any power of.
So why would Fitch go interested in this one?
Because they're quadratic, and that's the one which will cascade. So then the.
So they conserve.
Yeah, if you have just this transport equation, they're just. What I want to say. So I mentioned that omega is an active scalar, so it's why I will discuss a property of scalar, but it's simpler to look at property of scalar because then you are close to a linear problem and you can say a lot about it. And it's a scalar which is transport, so its property will be also linked to property of Lagrangian trajectories. But again, it's an active scalar and not a passive scalar. So now the folklore is that there is two, which is due to Pac-9 on the 60s, I think. Is it on the 60s? So there is two cascades. One of energy. So there is a flux of energy and a flux of entropy. So these two cascades cannot be in the same direction. So it's a flux through the scale, from some scale to another scale. Yeah.
What does it mean there's only two cascades? Why are there not cascades in some other
conserved quantity? But because you could, cascade means that you have a flux, a constant flux of this conserved quantity by scale from scale to scale. And you cannot have, if you have, because of scaling relation, if you have a cascade of omega square, you cannot have a cascade of omega to the power 24, because it will not be constant through the scale.
What is the
flux? So there is a flux of energy from scale to scale.
Is there an equation you can write?
I will do. Maybe I will talk about it. So first, the two cascades cannot be in the same direction because of scaling relation. Okay? So they are. Because cascade means that there is, for example, for the energy, to say that there is a cascade means that if you look at the flux of energy from at a scale L, that will be delta L squared divided by the typical time at scale L. Okay.
I can't. It's a delta U.
L, sub L, at a scale L. L, just a scale. Just this is just unweaving argument. Okay, you have a variation of U at scale L, and you have a typical time at scale L, or if you prefer, I can write it R. So to say that there is cascade means that this thing, typical time,
typical time of what?
What
changing? Typically.
So if you have a velocity, you have time at a scale L. So what? It's more or less, it's a turnover time. It's the time that that is given by the velocity at scale L. To say that you have a flux of energy means that more or less this quantity is constant through the scale. Okay. So if you have a flux of entropy. This means that delta omega r square over 2r is also constant through the scale. So this cannot be true for on the same scale because of the scaling relation between r and l. There is a difference here. So either you have the energy cascade or you have the entropy cascade. So that's why they are not in the same direction. What happens is that if you inject at a scale L, and then you have the dissipation scale at small scale, and then you have your infrared cutoff, you will have the energy cascade through the large scale. And the entropy cascade towards the small scale. So then you... Okay, I will explain, give an argument for...
If you inject
the energy at the scale L, it will be transported through the scale, blood flux, and you will find it at a scale, a larger scale. Okay?
In time.
Yeah, in time. And then when you will look at the stationary states, there will be constant flux of energy through the scale.
Do you have both?
Yeah, you have both at the same time. Yeah.
So you cannot have only one.
But you can imagine a way to excite velocity without exciting vorticity. That would be a potential flow, but the potential flow would be completely driven by boundary. You think that it's just, you can change boundary to trigger potential flow. Otherwise, you have both vorticity and velocity.
Okay. So, why is the cascade good?
I guess you're really sort of thinking steady state physically, right? I mean, otherwise. You have to talk about the conditions.
Yeah, exactly. That's how we model the thing. So otherwise, you can look at what happens when you look at when you inject energy, you look at what happens when everything decays, and you look at the. But
we look at the steady state.
Could you
give some stupid down-to-earth
physical example of a flow so that it's not better again? I will not give an example of a flow, I want just first to give an argument why that the entropy which goes to the small scale and not the energy. So if you inject energy and if you have flux or entropy, you have to dissipate it somewhere. So the quantity which goes to the small scale has to be dissipated at small scale. So the dissipation rate is given by, if you look at the equation which how this quantity evolves, dissipation rate of energy given by the square of the gradient multiplied by nu and of entropy is given by the square of the gradient of omega. And this follows from the fact that if you look at variation of energy in presence of forcing for the variation of the omega in time, there is a term which corresponds to the dissipation with a negative sign, which is u r square. And there is a term which corresponds to the injection, which is f omega. So this means that this term is the injection, corresponds to the injection of the entropy at large scale, at scale LF, and that's the dissipation. Now, because of scaling relation, if you have if you have a flux of energy, a constant flux of energy, it means that the dissipation rate should be absorbed by the dissipation. So if this one is finite at short scale, because that will be the scale LD where the dissipation will take place, this one will vanish. But if it was the opposite, that it was the energy which was going to the small scale, this will mean that this one will be finite. But because there is a 1 over L squared in this quantity, this means that this one will become infinite in the limit where the of large Reynolds number. So you cannot have a finite rate of dissipation of energy, because otherwise you will have an infinite rate of dissipation of entropy in the limit of large infinite Reynolds number. Okay. So the conclusion is that you have a new gradient square in the limit when new goes to zero is zero, but new gradient square omega new goes to zero is finite and equal to the flux of entropy. Okay. So that's why the entropy goes to small scale and the energy to large scale. So this is called dissipative anomaly. I think this name was introduced by Poryakov. Because it's an example of a quantity which naively vanishes in the limit where nu goes to zero. Nu is some kind of cutoff, but actually it does not vanish in the theory. Because gradient square of omega is very singular.
Which value?
That will be the flux of energy, so it will depend how you introduce you inject entropy. That will be one of the external parameters.
So what happens to the energy?
To the larger scale, and it decreases with time, actually. So there is not a stationary state. The proper stationary states, if you look for the energy, will increase linearly in time if there is no other way to extract the energy. So either you have a way to extract the energy by the bond, let's say on the wall of the box, or you have to introduce another mechanism to extract the energy if you want to find a steady state. Yeah.
Can we do that?
The energy will increase. What you introduce very often, you introduce in terms of friction, which is it's a linear term, just 1 over tau r. Tau is a typical term set to the friction. And this term also mimic what happened in the experiment, because experiments usually what people do, they are in a box, so the fluid, there is a friction between the fluid and the bottom.
How do I know that this friction happens at large scales? From what we're writing.
But you look at, you compare the.
It starts to matter at large scales.
Because
if you put the star small, large.
So you compare this time with the turnover time there. Okay. But as I will discuss, actually, the friction has an influence also at small scale on the scaling property of smooth. Omega. It will be the same term in Navier-Stokes. But okay.
And this whole tilde is external parameter?
It's a parameter, yeah.
External parameter.
Yeah. It's a typical time which then it introduces more scale where there is a large scale which may be of the order of this one, at above which the friction will be important.
Huh?
What? No, absolutely by just the. Yeah, but up to know, it's just unwaving argument that will be, yeah, when you have a statistical way of modeling turbulence, that will be the average of the situation. Okay.
Just a remark on 3D. That if I were to go in 3D, then I would get the u grad u square at finite limit.
And in 3 dimensions, so I was asked not to talk about 3 dimensions. So you asked me not to talk about 3 dimensions. So the scenario is totally different. Energy at some scales, and that's the energy which cascades toward the small scale. There is no inverse cascade. And so there is only a cascade of energy toward a small scale, and there is a dissipation of energy at small scale.
Okay. But then how this limit would be finite? Or
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How do you regularize them?
But everything is regular if you have a finite bit.
Is there some simple way to understand why the flow and you know, the energy of this case is so dramatically different than 3D versus 2D?
But the argument is because if you assume that there is two cascades, I give an argument why it's so different.
Yeah,
so then the question is why there is two cascades? Because there is two quantity-conserved quantities. That's enough? It's a poor argument. Okay. So I will describe it precisely what are the properties of the two cascades. Before I want to describe how we model it. So we want to look at the statistical property of turbulence of a property. So we introduce, we look at. Turbulence means that F is random, and you choose it to be so F is white noise in time, and is Gaussian. And G is the covariance power. So it means that G is almost, the covariance is almost constant up to a scale LF and then decrease. So what we want to find is so the question is, because Pierre wants to know what are the so in general you want to find the statistical property of the velocity field or vorticity field or whatever in the two cascades, the two inertial range. So that's called the, this domain is called the inertial range. So you want to find the statistical property of the field. So what is universal and what is not? What are the mechanisms which are at the origin of the statistical property? So, for example, what is expected that there will be anomalous scaling for the field. So, is there anomalous scaling? And what is expected that the scaling are universal. And for example, in the case of the passive scalar, we will understand why they are universal. We will see the origin of which explains explain why the scaling exponents are universal, and this is related to the existence of the zero mode. And but the amplitude are not universal in general. It means that they depend on the way you inject the energy, and here it will mean that they depend explicitly on the for the covariant you choose for the force. Okay. So again, we'll see this if we have time to see how we can answer this kind of question in the case of the passive scalar.
So what is the Bellman scalar?
We will look at correlation function of omega or phi as a function of the distance. Okay. Well, there will be, now I will explain, there is naive scaling that you find by just dimensional analysis, both in the energy cascade and the universe cascade. But this scaling is broken when you look at IOM, at various correlation functions. So I want to describe the basic property of the two cascades. So that's called the direct cascade, actually.
Can you
ask
a general question?
Yeah.
Since you raised the Stokes equation. So what you wrote is a flow of entropy, flow of vorticity, and put random force.
Yeah.
Right? But I can equally write flow of energy or
of velocity,
whatever, and then put external forcing, which I can choose random. And of course, there will be different problems when I put energy, random, right hand side. I write it. Low for energy, same equation for energy. And I also say that right hand side is random. It will be different problem.
A little bit, yeah. But
yeah. So
for that problem you find if I have the way I formulated it correspond to a flow of energy with some special forcing which will depend on the.
Yes. So my question is why two bolts is believed to be mimicked by adding random force in the equation in the flow of vorticity, not to any other flow.
Whereas for velocity, one force is just curl of another.
Ah, yeah, for the velocity, yeah, for velocity or vorticity, that would be the same. Yeah, but you want to describe your basic equation for your dynamical system without forcing is the Navier-Stokes or the. You will not describe. If you want to do fluid mechanics, you will not just write the equation for the energy. The degree of freedom initially are the velocity.
So you put some randomness in the system, right?
Yeah.
There are thousands of ways to put randomness in, and the answer will be different, perhaps.
Let's try to ask differently. Does your force conserve vorticity that they have created in pairs?
No. No.
My question is, what determines the way how you introduce randomness to the system? You can write many equations and put this randomness in many different ways. Why this particular way to put randomness is believed to be correct?
Sure.
Since you raised it already,
I should have erased it before. But no, but sure, I don't have a good. But energy is a derived quantity with respect to the basic degree of freedom. So you couple the random variable to all the degree of freedom because you want to mix all the modes.
You can write flow of energy, flow of momentum, flow of whatever, and put randomness in every of these equations.
There will be randomness. Because all the equations you mentioned are derived from the Navier-Stokes equation. So we put randomness on the.
Yeah, but
it's true that you can do.
Let me repeat the question. So you write equation for flow of vorticity and say that right hand side is random.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to write equation for flow of energy.
Yeah.
And then the right hand side will be also random,
yeah.
But the distribution will depend on that randomness.
Exactly, yeah.
You're saying that the right hand side in the vorticity is random according to this law.
Yeah, but okay.
But why I can say that random, the right hand side of the energy flow is random according to this flow, then the situation will change.
To change, yeah.
But system acts on it by a force. And it's a force which has some random flow. Now you can take curl of it and get right inside the equation of vorticity. You multiply it by velocity and get a force in the equation of energy. You can do whatever, but it's a single force which just a force, you know, the acceleration equal to force. And this is force and this is random. Quantity. You can do many things
Why is force supposed to be...
No, what you believe... No, that's just a model. That's just a model. But if you believe that there is some universe... Maybe it's completely wrong, but if you believe that there is some universality inside the initial range, it doesn't matter too much the way you excite the system.
Really? So you think that...
I know, I don't know. But if this is a standard folklore. So if there is some universality, it doesn't matter too much. If you do it in some generic way, and then if it's generic enough, you choose the simplest one that you want.
I'm saying that you have to conserve vorticity. If you excite a vortex locally, you have to create another vortex. So the force should be conserved. Then
conserved mean?
Conserve vorticity.
But it excites vortices. No, it creates vortex. I think. Okay. So that's I think that's what's behind the universality argument, that saying that it doesn't matter too much the way you excite the system. So you choose. Okay, so now I want to describe just what is expected to be true in the direct cascade and then in the energy cascade, and that maybe will be useful for Richard Stoke. So you inject entropy, and so I define it in bar as a mean. And so what I want to find is the scaling relation. So you expect that these entropy will be transferred to the small scale via the cascade. So you want a constant flux, so you want that omega flux of energy delta that's not a constant flux. And tau r is a one over time. So at scale r, so it's r over delta u r. And since delta omega is delta u divided by r, typically, what you learn is that delta omega delta u is like r 3 should be more or less constant to the scale. So you learn that delta u r, the typical variation of the velocity at the scale r, is linear in r, epsilon 1/3 times r. So u r is typically a smooth field in the direct. Delta omega r will be constant, which means that it's maybe up to logarithmic correction. So that's the naive scaling for the Dirac cascade. It's not the same as in Kolmogorov, that's a Kraken scaling. So what you learn also that the, if you look at the energy, so in, the energy is this one. If you write it into in mod, that would be a TK here, okay? And by the same scale, you find that you have a, you find a spectrum in the Dirac cascade for the when K, the moment to K corresponds to the range here, that it's in a power K minus 3. So that's track 9. So that's a naive scaling argument just by dimensional analysis. And when you do this dimensional analysis, you have in mind that that the cutoff do not play any role. There is only the minimization rate which appears. There is no the what the large scale where you inject the energy doesn't enter in the scaling.
So this built-in proportional part, that's something like Kolmogorov.
No. Kolmogorov is not the same scaling, and we find the Kolmogorov scaling in the energy cascade. For Kolmogorov, the velocity field is not smooth. It's a. I will.
Talking about the same point,
but not in the same regime. We are talking about the velocity in the Dirac cascade. Kolmogorov is a velocity in the energy cascade. So it's not some.
But
not in the same scale. So when you. When you are in two dimensions, you have two scale domains, and the velocity does not behave the same way in the two scale domains.
Okay.
In the Dirac cascade, between the dissipation scale and the injection scale.
Coming inside the compiler equations, not just compiler equations, plus information that there is a delta.
Yeah, actually, I will give you this. This is the only exact statement that you can do for turbulence. Is this law? Is this the law for the third moment? That I will give the exact formula. It's purely kinematics. That's it. So just want to finish before giving the just to answer your question that if you start with Navier-Stokes equation plus the dissipative anomaly. Or so the fact that there is a constant flux, you find that that if you look at parallel velocity at a scale r, so we define what it is, so parallel scale r, average to the third power. This is equal to epsilon. So this is exact.
What does it mean? Delta U.
So delta U parallel. So you define. So delta U, you have two points at the distance r. So delta U is U at r minus U at zero. Say delta U parallel is a variation of U along the direction of R, parallel to R, okay? So it's R, modulo R, delta U. And delta orthogonal is the one orthogonal to it, okay? So that's just pure kinematics, nothing more. Right? It just comes from the Navier-Stokes equation on the advection term on the fact that you have a dissipation anomaly.
So this is exact formulation of the...
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, that's just a variant of computation done by Kolmogorov long ago, but for today.
So that's the input.
In the statistical model, the epsilon omega is just the, that's the value of epsilon omega.
And you're scaling
impermanence, how does it happen that the good need is not part of you?
Because it's in the energy cascade, I will find. What? What do you mean? I find the scaling argument, actually, I find delta cube is... Huh?
Yeah.
What was the scaling argument? Yeah, because it's an energy, cascade in 3D.
Ah, so this...
So what you involve is, I will do it just after. What is constant is energy flux, not the entropy flux. Okay? And that will change the scaling. Okay? So, to answer your question, that concerning the dissipation scale, you will evaluate the scale, dissipation scale, by saying that this term, using the scaling argument I have, is equal to epsilon bar, okay? So the dissipation scale is defined by... It's where you see that this is some kind of ultraviolet cutoff, and so nu plays the role of the cutoff. So this is like an anomaly in quantum field theory. So now this is what you have naively. This cannot be true because these two scaling are actually incompatible. So there is necessarily logarithmic correction. So there should be no logarithmic correction. Because if you have a K-3 spectrum, it means that you have a U will scale like R log R delta U. So you cannot have both at the same time. So one proposal was done by Grisha and Lebedev. So there is so there was a proposal by Crack 9, saying that there is just, I think, a logarithmic correction to the energy spectrum, and there is a proposal by Falkovich and Lebedev, which says that delta omega, if you look at omega square, instead of, the naive scaling says that delta omega is not really meaningless, it's just a constant. So the there will be a logarithmic correlation with the exponent 2/3. And there is an N-weaving argument for this 2/3, which maybe I can explain later, but to understand the N-weaving argument, you have to understand the property of Lagrangian trajectories a little bit.
L should be LF,
yeah.
The resistance size.
Because in this cascade, you forget about the large ultraviolet. This scale doesn't matter. That's your large scale, and that's your ultraviolet scale. Okay. Then, that will be... If you forget about friction, but we know that we have to inject, we have a way to absorb the energy. So there is also the fact that you cannot completely forget about the friction. And also, the friction is a mechanism which is there to absorb the energy at large scale. It has an influence on the direct cascade. And why it has an influence on the direct cascade is because when you have friction, the answer. Entropy is bounded. So you cannot have such a scaling, and you will have a scaling which will be dependent on the friction. So omega, delta omega r, we then scale with some exponent, so if you look at the second moment, as a function of the friction parameters, and everything should depend on the friction parameters, and there is... so it means that in a way the friction becomes a marginal perturbation in the direct cascade. But the way this exponent depends on the friction is not known. But then to some exponent which depend on the friction. Just because when you have friction, then you...
Does friction have the dimension?
It will be the friction as a dim, so... what is independent of friction is the okay, that's a dimensionless parameter. Yeah? Okay? So that's your control parameter when there is friction on the exponent. When there is friction, necessarily because the entropy density is bounded, you cannot have a logarithmic divergence. So you have to have a scaling law with a positive power. On this case, this exponent cool. Actually, will depend on the friction. For large friction, but
the problem is that
it's not physical. For large friction, everything is Gaussian, but you lose all the cascade. Actually, when there is friction, there is not a constant flux of energy, of entropy. So you break the cascade, but the friction is there experimentally.
The omega squared expectation is bounded by the friction. That is, there's a formula that says it's bounded.
Yeah, it's just bounded by the injection.
Okay.
Just because you absorb some.
What's the reason why you
add
friction there?
Friction because the energy was increasing, so you have to absorb the you have a mechanism which should absorb the energy if you have you want to have a steady state. But also in the experiment, what you are doing, you have your fluid in some box plate, and there is a friction with the bottom of the plate. So it's how experiment that is. Models are friction and it depends on the signet of the fluid.
Without any friction.
Huh?
Without any friction.
Yeah.
Now, here's the situation with the random force.
It's a question, but you will never reach a steady state, at least, except maybe for the Galilean environment quantity. But the energy is increasing. And I told you that in the experiment, you always have a friction.
Maybe small also.
Yeah.
So, without friction and this friction,
no.
Or there is only one problem?
There's two problems when you. Huh?
That's two problems.
Yeah.
So, how does the friction term affect the entropy cascade now? Though it's a small scale, I understand, but does it affect it at all?
But it affects it because it implies that, yeah. So, also, it's a mechanism which extracts the energy, it has an influence on all scales. Okay. So as you so that was more or less a general picture for the direct cascade, now in the inverse cascade. So the energy, there is an energy flux. So the scaling will be more like Kolmogorov. So again, you have mean energy. You define the mean energy rate. Cylon bar. And you want the constant flux, so of energy. So delta, now it's delta U square over tau R, which should be constant. This is because tau r is a typical turnover time. This is delta u r 3 over. When you find Kolmogorov scaling. Okay. In this cascade. This is the only. This is an exact statement. So again, if you look at Navier-Stokes equation plus no energy dissipation, you find that what are the exact formula? The delta U parallel to the cube equal to delta U. So in a three dimension, this is known as the Kolmogorov law. It's a four field law. This coefficient is different with a different sign because the cascade has a different direction.
Coefficient is 3.5.
Yeah. and three dimension is 4 or 5. Okay, so this cascade is what I want to say now. Yeah. So the folklore is that so again, this cascade takes place in between. The cascade is between L and F and some ultraviolet scale. So now the ultraviolet cutoff is the injection scale. So the folklore is no anomaly. Structure function. Which means that if you look at the higher moment of the velocity, at some power n, naively, they will scale like the standard with the naive scaling.
Excuse me. Are you still complete?
Yeah.
Now, this formula, then you means R, and to the left,
the cube is R cube.
How should I understand both formulas together?
Which formula?
Another
scale.
Yeah, so this one and another one left.
And that one?
Yeah.
But that, again, it's not in the same regime. You have two.
It's in different scale.
So that will be with R between LD and LF. So if you want the exact statement, what it is, it has, this is limit, nu goes to zero of that one, limit R goes to zero. That one divided by R squared. That's the exact statement. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the exact statement here will be limit nu goes to zero. R goes to infinity.
And they will mesh
at R. So that means that this is true for R large, or maybe if you have a triangular cutoff.
Okay, so
they will
have.
Okay, it's not the same. So that's a folklore. So this has been more or less verified numerically by.
Do I understand? Yeah, sorry, I'm not very knowledgeable. In 3D, this is different. There is multifractal.
Yeah. Yeah. So in 3D, what you expect is that if you look at the velocity, we have some moment. So they will have there is a naive spectrum, and then there is a correction to the spectrum. So some L over R, some power LF, by scaling argument, some, I don't know how to write it, rho to the N. Okay. With some amplitude, okay, which depends on N. When I say what is universal is that these exponents are universal, they are dominant when the injection length large, because it's positive, but these ones are not universal in the sense that they depend on the way you inject energy.
And evidence for this is from numerics or otherwise in 3D?
No, there is experiment in 3D.
Experiment,
in 2D, also there is experiment. Seems to indicate that this is. It's you. Well, all the mom, you have to. At the end.
No difference between transversal and whatever you do, save both.
By there is mix, but this is just scaling argument that I was mentioning. So you probably, I don't know if in the numeric, I don't remember in the numeric you did choose.
If I choose nth moment,
yeah, it will scale. I believe that the scale is the same. Yeah. So, but that's for the velocity. I think this doesn't mean that everything is normal, that there is no hidden anomalous dimension behind the scene. So, there could be an. I don't know exactly which one, but the fact that the velocity is quasi normal is just doesn't imply that all the quantities are normal, have no anomalous dimension. And more or less, the fact that probably what Krisha will explain concerning the fractal dimension of the contour of the isoline in 2D turbulence, the fact that they have fractal dimension corresponding to percolation is an indication that there is anomalous dimension, because if there is this fractal dimension, it means that the length, the ultraviolet length scale has to appear in this, what Grisha will explain, and when the ultraviolet length scale appears, it means that okay. Another way to understand why there is anomalous scaling somewhere in the inverse cascade is by looking at the property of the Lagrangian trajectories or of the passive scalar. And if you look at the passive scalar in the transported by the fluid given by the inverse cascade, it's an anomalous. So it means that Lagrangian trajectories in 2D inverse cascade are anomalous. Meaning that the scalar has anomalous dimension. The passive scalar has anomalous dimension if it's transported by the 2D inverse cascade.
So do we know anything about the moments of delta omega? Or is it supposed to be trivial now? Does it also have this gap scaling?
I don't know.
It's not right.
But the moment is first since omega is a negative dimension, if you look at the moment, you have a divergence. So I believe that there is anomalous scaling. Or Krisha believes that if you coarse grain correctly, you will find normal moment for the coarse grain variable. But that's why I think that there is anomalous dimension, because omega, there is a singularity when you approach to the moment.
So that's
to fill omega.
Okay.
Yeah, no, sure. As you see, almost nothing is known exactly. So. So the last point I want. Yeah.
So if we look at the velocity field themselves, because of these two different scaling, do you expect that the velocity field picture will change in a different dimension?
Yeah, they are not the same in the. Yeah, okay, okay. So the last point I wanted to make just before back that the fact that the length scale is the injection scale, the ultraviolet cutoff is the ultraviolet cutoff. Means that we are closer to we reverse a little bit of locality because we inject at a very very small scale. Okay, let me explain why. Okay. Lagrangian transport. So it's a little bit disconnected to the turbulence, but not completely. Okay. Which means that we look at passive transport. So what we have in mind is that we have a scalar, which will denote T of X and T in dimension D. it is transported by some velocity field. Pt plus u. T, and then you sag the system to a force F, and there is a kappa diffusion term. That corresponds to that's the transport aspect of the problem. On the second, the other aspect of the problem concerns Lagrangian trajectories. This means that these are trajectories that the particle put in the field will follow. So it's defined by an equation that position at time t is just a solution of the equation t. So that's just a trajectory. If you give the initial position at time s, it will be at time x of t. So the two problems are obviously related because the scalar is transported by the fluid as a trajectory, as a particular. So what u would be a random velocity field either given by a solution of the Navier-Stokes equation or by the experiment, like in 2D turbulence, or in order to solve the problem we'll find some artificial, we describe the fluid with an artificial statistic which would mimic what we expect to have in turbulence. So the aim of this problem is to try to understand what could be the statistic and why there is a mass dimension and where they are coming from. So we find that...
just to clarify, u is given to you, given the equation. U is a
given function. U is a velocity.
Where is
it will depend on the problem. Yeah. Or some set of u, some sample of realization of velocity.
The is not coming from
It could be. It could be. It could be. It could be coming from Navier-Stokes equation. When I said, at the end of the previous lecture, I said that if you look at Lagrangian trajectory in 2D turbulence, they have anomalous dimensions. It's just because if you look at this solution of this equation with u given by the Navier-Stokes equation in the inverse cascade, you will find some anomalous property in this trajectory. So u can be given as a...
No,
but numerically they can do it. No, it's guessing numerically. So analytically, what we will do, we just choose some arbitrary...
This choice, arbitrary choice, may not be relevant to...
No, it will be relevant for physics, for mathematics.
Non-linear to a linear equation.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I mean, your original Navier-Stokes equation was non-linear in U, right? But now you have sort of...
So that's... That's this is a passive scalar, okay. Because there is no interaction between t and u, so it's a linear equation for t. And if you look at the vorticity, it's the same kind of equation, except it's a non-linear one, because there is a reaction of omega on u. So what we want to find is that there is a connection between in some model. Some simple model. Okay. But the conclusion seems to be generic and valid for other models. There is anomalous scaling, even if u is not anomalous. So in the simple model, u will be Gaussian with a simple scaling law. Then there is anomalous dimension in element scaling in T, which are universal. In the sense I mentioned before, that is these anomaly scaling are related to what is called a, we understand the anomaly scaling, which is related to what we call zero mode, which are some martingale for some processes. And this zero mode means that there is are linked to some property of the trajectories. So they are linked, these are linked to some conserved quantities, quantity conserved. In mean by the Lagrangian flow. So it's why actually we have this quantity of martingale. And this is a property of the trajectory, which means that there is some kind of coherent structure between the Lagrangian trajectories. So there's some kind of is linked to some coherent structure. And then if I have time also, I will explain the relation between explosive nature of the Lagrangian trajectories and dissipation anomaly.
Between, we will discuss.
Yeah, a bit. Yeah. Okay. So that's so the model I will discuss is quark-type model. So first, why the two problems are related? Why the scalar, the Lagrangian, the problem of passive transport, which is described by this one, the problem of Lagrangian trajectories are related. So it's more or less by definition. But we can write a little bit more equation. That's if you look at the transport equation with for kappa equal to zero, if you look, so the fluid is transported by the scalar is transported, that means that the scalar is advected by the fluid. So if you look at the quantity T of X of T and T, just satisfy T of X of T, T equal to F. If there was no forcing, just the fluid will be transported by the velocity. Okay? It's kappa, that's so, where X, this is. That's the Lagrangian trajectory. With x dot equal to u x. So when kappa is not zero, you have to look at the stochastic version of that one by introducing a white noise. So for kappa from zero, you look at the equation dx u of x t dt plus kappa d pt. Well, this is a Brownian motion. So once we have this this formula, you see that you will link the statistical property of T with the statistical property of the trajectories. So we model the system by introducing some randomness in the forcing. I forget to set it. Just as before, so F is Gaussian with what is that? And so that corresponds to the mimic the injection of energy for the scalar. The energy for the scalar is just integral of t square. It's conserved in absence of dissipation forcing. And there is a cascade of energy between the dissipation scale and L, and that there is a cascade of energy with respect to that way. So, probably any power of T will be conserved, but again. So once you have so F is random, and to model it, we will have U will be also random. U, and I will specify it a little bit when I will define what the Kraken model here is. But once you have that, you see that the set is, so U, the T is a random field because it's a solution of a differential equation with random coefficient. But you see that the statistic of T will be linked to the statistic of the trajectories, because if you look at the, let's say the endpoint function of T, so T of position x and t is just integral of the initial time dt ts of s of f just the given by the trajectory, which is at time t, so x, at the point x where you observe the fluid. Okay. So, as a consequence, the statistic of t is linked to if you look at the moment of t, yeah. If kappa is not zero, you have to use it. So again, this is trajectory in term of.
Do you still assume that f is a vector probability?
Yeah. So. So since you assume that f and u are not correlated, because then you have the decoupling between the statistic of f and the statistic of trajectories, and statistic the moment of u can be written as there is integral over the time, ds, and then just by introducing a delta function in this formula, you find that moment of f are linked to the distribution of the trajectories of n trajectories and times the statistic of f. Okay, that's the probability distribution function of n trajectories, which means that the probability that you have n trajectories which are at position x1 at t, x2, xn, time t, and the way at position y1 at s1, yn at sn. Okay? So, if you know the scaling, the property of the trajectories, more or less you know what the response of the scalar to the forcing. Maybe I will be okay. Mm. Huh? Maybe this probability is simply the.
This Sorry, I probably missed it, but so what is the distribution between randomness and mu that we're choosing here?
We have some randomness in U. I still didn't specify it.
But we haven't specified it.
But there is some, okay?
There's a randomness in U, there's a randomness in M.
Eh?
Uncorrelated.
Yeah, uncorrelated.
The dimension doesn't matter.
Yeah. Everything. It's so general that we can say everything. Or whatever we want. Okay. It's passive, otherwise. If properly. If T was omega, it was an active, so omega was linked to U. So then the statistic of F will be mixed to the statistic of U. And you will not have this factorization. Okay?
If
it's not random, but just zero,
it's random.
You can say many things, probably. What will happen is that the scalar will decay because there is dissipation. Okay, so it will decay. So you can look at decaying property of the scalar. And more or less, you will have the same thing. Because what will matter, what will be the important piece, will be the property of the trajectories. Okay, and that will be compatible with what we expect concerning universality. It doesn't depend much the way you excite the system, so the property of the scalar will be quite independent of F, provided there is a forcing, but it would be dominated by the property of the trajectories. Okay? So it's why I never look at it, but if you look at the decaying problem, you will be able to say. But actually, we know many expansions of
P. Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly.
But then, for this problem, F is zero.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Then you will see how it becomes uniform, and you will be able to say something about how it approaches the uniform distribution.
In random places.
Just because you are blending, so you cannot stop blending.
You have two randomness here, right?
Yeah.
This is
the second one. So this is. No, a mathematician. So U, E, U, F. With respect to F. And this is a PDF in the U field for you.
And it's ever show the Brownian motion also?
Yeah, if you, in the case, yeah. Okay? Yeah. So for example, if you look at this, so now I will, as you say, it's so general that we can say so much, so I will specify to the problem that we can solve, so it is a Kraken problem.
Then U
is a question. Right now it's in time, incompressible. So people have looked at the compressible case with scaling U, R is a subparameter, psi is a x over 2. No, so, is it psi x over 2? What does it mean? That means if you look at U, so E, U, X, T, I, Y, F, so it's translation invariant, it's waiting time, D is divergence free. It's incompressible, and the scaling relation for D is like this one. Okay? Excuse me?
What do you mean the diffuse state?
No. Then why we choose a... If you think about turbulence, R with scale in the Kolmogorov regime or in the energy cascade, R is like 1 over scale, like R. U scale like R to the power 1/3.
Yeah.
So it's why you want some irregular field, not some smooth field.
Yeah,
when X is 2, it means... So it should be X about 2. No? So when X is... when X is 2, then you're in the smooth scale. Yeah. Okay, so... so then in that case, we can solve the problem completely. And what we will find that there is this zero mode, and that this zero mode governs the anomaly scaling of T. So it's why T is universal, the anomaly scaling is universal. And the zero mode are just conserved quantities. Quantity conserved by the flow.
So these are conserved quantities of which
dynamics? Of the Lagrangian. The Lagrangian trajectories, when you consider n Lagrangian trajectories. I will be more explicit, just you know. So there are martingale. Does it help?
Yeah.
Okay, so what does it mean? So the naive scaling is. So what's the anomaly? So the social function for T. So if you look at the 2-point function, T at position R. So that's just given by the normal scaling that you can deduce from the transport equation. So naively, we find that the naive scaling argument which says that TR to the power n to n, say, will scale like R to n 2 minus xc. But what you find is that there is an anomaly scaling which is times rho n, and rho n is positive, so it's dominant when for l going to infinity, or which is the same thing for R going to zero, and this is a equation function in the limit when kappa, so you are inside the inertial range, because this dissipation scale goes to zero with kappa, so when you take the first limit kappa goes to zero, it means that you are in this range when you take L goes to infinity. So
this L is LF.
Yeah, it's LF, yeah. Again, it's LF.
No, LF is...
Yeah, so I didn't explain much because I spent so much time in the previous hours that there was a cascade, that the cascade is going.
But just, so the U random,
F
random.
Yeah.
Do they have the same LF?
No, LF is just... No. LF is there, okay? With G. Okay? So LF is just mimic where you inject the energy, and then you have a cascade between this large scale, LF,
just
on the small scale.
Forces distributed with the scale delta.
Yeah.
How does U distribute? Delta with some scale.
But it's just
scale delta. Why?
Just because.
Not other choices.
No, because you. What you want to mimic a little bit what happened in turbulence. So where you have a velocity field in the Kolmogorov scaling is not smooth. And that's a scaling property. Okay, that's what you do. And then you want to be sure that there is cascade from a large, like in a turbulence in 3D, from a large scale to a small scale. So it's why you choose this forcing. And then you choose Gaussian white noise in time in order to be able to solve it, which is far from what you have in turbulence. Because otherwise you cannot solve it. You stop. You go to lunch. Gaussian one does not, and the white noise in time does not mimic what happened in turbulence. But if you have not, why not white noise in time? You stop very quickly.
And what's the motivation to do this problem? Like a double meaning?
You solve it and you learn something which happened to be true also if you look at Lagrangian trajectories in the turbulent system.
You will emphasize this.
I said it just numerical work.
Hey,
Yeah, or better, because it's non-linear, you don't know how it's right. Yeah.
So you assume that there is a net active problem, set of problems.
I think what we learn from that is that we make explicit the role, why there was some universality on one, in the anomalous dimension, and what was the origin of this universality, because it's linked to the zero mode I will explain, which are linked to the property of the trajectory from Bonstedt. And also it was clear from these models that we I think we understand better the explosive nature of the trajectories. So the trajectories in the turbulent flow are not like trajectories in chaotic systems. In chaotic systems, trajectories separate exponentially with time, and in turbulent systems, they do it polynomially. So at short times, they do it faster. And that's linked to dissipation. Dissipation. So we understand it better, I think, from that model.
So what do we know about rho n?
Now we know rho n perturbation theory. So there was two kind of perturbation theory which was done. I didn't say all the name, but so one was the large D perturbation, which was done by Grisha and his collaborator, and then there was a perturbation theory done in Xi. So we know it in perturbations, yeah. But to some order, but not exactly. So then we know also the large N behavior, which has some.
The perspective view is not smooth, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that was another problem. That's why you put kappa, and then you take the limit kappa goes to zero. And it's why they are not actually, that's a good point, they are not, that's what I want to explain at the end. The explosive nature of the trajectories are linked to the fact that actually these trajectories are not defined. What you define is the measure on the trajectory. Yeah. But even in the limit when kappa goes to zero, you still have a distribution of trajectories. Yeah. Exactly.
How relevant is this calculation of the colloid nodes compared to white nodes in this?
So it depends on the regime, I think. I forget. I think the incompressible case is relevant, so we don't know. And some regime, when it's incompressible, there is a regime where it's irrelevant. But otherwise, I forget exactly. There has been some work by Kupianen and Gavetsky on trying to see the phase diagram of what was when you incorporate time. You break the white noise in time correlation. But I think it's relevant when it's incompressible, so it will change what happens, if I remember correctly. But not when it's incompressible, it's, there's a regime where it's irrelevant, if I remember correctly. Okay, so and then there is some anomalous scaling amplitude here which depends on the forcing. So it's non-universal, depending on the way you force. What's the meaning of this exponent here in terms of Lagrangian trajectories is what I mentioned before, that it conserves quantities. It means that if you look at n trajectories, and you want to find the distribution of the field, we can look at like this. If you pick a function of n variables, xn, you can look at average of this function along as a test function for the trajectory for you. So in general, this will be dependent of time, and naively, if phi scale like r to the sigma, then t of phi will scale like t over 2 minus c just by scaling r. Trajectory have a tendency to separate. But there is function for the phi of x1, xn, such that e of phi is independent of time. So they are conserved in mean. And this function are function, scaling function. Which means that phi of the x is lambda to some power zeta n phi of x. On the xn are exactly the animal's dimension. So the animal's dimension, the dimension here which appear in scalar field, are the scaling dimension of these conserved quantities. And this is just because actually the endpoint function, this conserved quantity, dominates the endpoint function of the scalar. Which means that T. So all the anomalous dimension of the scalar comes from the anomalous behavior of these trajectories, and why the dimension are universal, because so universal means independent of the forcing, is just because they are linked to the zero mode, which do not involve the forcing at all, because they are just linked to the property, they just imply involve the velocity field. So the fact that's exactly why it's so we see why it's called a zero mode, why it's a martingale, it's clear that the process which has t sent to the this function because it's conserved in time, but if we were conditioning it will produce the value of the motion at time s, if we condition up to time s, so it's clear that by definition it's a martingale.
Sir, do these depend on time or
what? So if there is function phi, you can such as the average is independent of time. But you can do a simple exercise. You just take the Brownian motion with two n particles, and you will find functions which are independent of time. Okay. So just a generalization of this kind of function. So we understand in that model why there was universality. Because there was a decoupling between velocity and forcing, and the leaning behavior is anomalous because it's dominated by this zero. What I wanted to say. Yeah, so concerning the coherence of the trajectory. Generically, when you have trajectories, they have a tendency to separate, and the distance between the trajectories will scale like e to the 2 to the Wyman and Xi of T. That's the standard scaling argument for the separation between two trajectories. So it's quite naively the function would scale like that. So the fact that you have a function which are, it means that this kind of function of, they reflect some kind of bound set of the trajectory. There's some geometric property of trajectory which go against this scaling, this course, this separation of the trajectory. But you generally, if you take any arbitrary test function for the trajectory, it increases with time with some power. So the fact that it's some function, it's like if, like in, you can see about quantum mechanics, you have some bound set which reflects some geometric property of the trajectory, which go against the fact that you think the average increase as a, like a power law in time. So there is a way to study a little bit more precisely how the shape of the structure involves as a function of the scale, but it's a bit more, too bit too involved to do it now. So I want to give a few now a few details how you arrive at this statement. Yeah.
And T is supposed to be small?
But so scaling... No.
But for what?
For any T.
So you don't have Lagrange, you don't have the sum of...
No. Except for when it's smooth. So, like... So how you arrive at this statement? So this scaling just comes from the scaling property of the velocity. The fact that you have this scaling. First you look at the. So we have seen that we have to look at the distribution of the trajectory. So we look at the probability transition for the trajectories. It means that we, from time S to time T, we have CG. So we have some distribution of the trajectory from, let's say, Y1 to X1, YN to XN, so it's X, T, Y. So that's since you can iterate, it's a semi-group, so it's there is a generator, so it can be written exponential of t by translation invariance, exponential of t, some differential operators, mn. And this is a second order differential operator. So this is just a generalization of Brownian motion. So Mn is typically Mn is of the form dIgdIdg, but you have to sum over all the particles and so on. So the scaling of Mn is given by the scaling of the velocity, d scale like as the xi. And when you compute the average of some function here, so if you have E of phi of x, 1 of t, x, n of t, this can be written as an integral in terms of this. So if you know that at time s, you start x1 of x is x, but the xg at time s are xg, YG, this is the integral over T product over the DX j from g equal 1 to n pn x g y s phi of x. Okay. So if mn phi equal to 0, then if of phi is independent of time. Okay. Just by taking the derivative. So that's why these functions are just a zero mode, and again, process t goes to process. So that they are zero mode. Which is the same thing as saying that t goes if one of t dot 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 is a marking. Actually, local martingale if it's not. So if you find such a function, then you are sure to have a conserved quantity. So that's the Lagrangian, the construction on the Lagrangian side. Yeah. As far as they were coming from Lagrangian, yeah.
You can say, okay, this is my assumption, and I want to check it directly for turbulent forward, it's satisfied or not.
People live in deep, you know, the system which has no Lagrangian trajectory, like shell models, and they are not the same, like those scale.
So this is the basic assumption.
Yeah.
Okay, perpendicular.
Yeah. I agree. For that?
That's why it's
delta correlated in time.
This is sort of unimportant,
but it's delta correlated in time. Otherwise, you would never have such a formula.
No. Be Gaussian. It has to be Gaussian, otherwise it doesn't work. It has to be Gaussian too. Yeah. So then that's for. One for the trajectory, and how this is linked to the scalar.
That's
Markov because of that, no?
Yeah.
Because it does this form, then it's Markov.
So this is a basic input, but assume it's Markov.
We assume more because it's delta correlated in time, so it's more than that.
But are they really markup?
If I really drop in or continue to drop in? But I think by this definition.
Equation is
non-linear.
So not
because
velocity
is not actually the other problem. Yeah. Other reason for it, I guess. But generally, it's the finite
Yeah.
So in the real, in experiment or whatever real things related to turbulence, are they really mark up this Lagrangian concept? No.
He said no.
It's a good approximation problem.
Is there any measure of this? No, it's a finite memory. Why would it be Markov? But what is written is Markov. Yeah. What is written is Markov, but it's a problem that we can solve.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's exactly the key point, right?
If you believe that they are Markov, then you can apply many, many things. You don't, but you don't really know, or do you?
I don't.
Martingales exist for Markov processes.
Yeah.
The crucial point here, if, excuse me, just 20 seconds. The crucial point here is that you have a martingale, and you have a anomalous scaling of Planck scalar, and they are the same.
Yeah.
And this is something which goes well beyond Markov process. Of course, we can do analytical theory on the Markov process, but we can do experimental study. And experimentally, go to your flow and check that the power law of martingale is the same as the power law of of scalar that you put there. So this is, there is nothing special about Markov properties here. Martingale and martingale. But analytically, we can work
on this
case.
It gives a mechanism for universality on the anomalous scaling. Of course, maybe it's not the right mechanism for turbulence, but it gives one. And as you said, this has been checked. This scenario has been checked in for Lagrangian, when people study Lagrangian trajectories in 2D inverse cascade, which is not delta. Correlated in time, there is a time correlation, correction time, and so on. But then again, if you look at the passive scalar in the inverse cascade regime, it has anomalous scaling, and the anomalous scaling is given by some conservative quantity for the associated to the Lagrangian trajectories in that flow.
Yes, it's true.
It proves that this mechanism is present time to time in physical world. But it's intermittent, so it's present. Okay. So now for the scalar. So
it says, so in other words, it says that there is no direct evidence that process this trajectory or other trajectories are not Markov.
There's too many negations that have been lost in the number of negations.
Data that they are not marked.
Yeah, that's correlation time.
Yeah. Experimental data shows that they are not Markov. You suggest that they are Markov.
I don't suggest it's not Markov, but just this model. First, you can solve it, so you can say something, which this suggests a mechanism for which could apply in other situations, but we. I wasn't sure that it will apply. So it's clear that from the since the way I wrote the moment of the scalar that if you know how to control this kernel, then you know how to control the passive scalar. Okay. So another way to So since when you try to control this kernel, you have to introduce this zero mode because they appear in the leading asymptotic of the kernel. It's natural that the zero mode will appear in the moment of the scalar. Another way to arrive at the same statement is by looking at the equation that the moment has to satisfy when you impose that they are stationary. So if you have a stationary measure, you have a set of equations which usually are never closed, like when you have a non-linear problem, but in the case of a linear problem, they close.
So we have taken the diffusivity already to zero, the kappa is already zero in your discussion, right?
I take the limit when kappa goes to zero. Because you can do it for finite kappa, and then you take...
Yeah.
If kappa is not zero, this just add plus kappa. The diffusivity term.
Yeah,
but then you don't have zero mode and so on. So, the quantity are constant at kappa equals. So, this implies a set of equations which have the form to give. Mn acting on the nth moment of the scalar is the sum of all the moments each position R on S, XR, minus x. Okay. That's just a standard Hopf equation which comes from the fact when you impose that the measure is invariant. So you take the time derivative of the nth moment and you demand it to be invariant, to be zero. So if m was a, you can do it for finite kappa, but then you take the limit when kappa goes to zero. If m was an invertible operator, there will be no anomalous scaling because you will just iterate this operation. You will invert m, act on that, and by scaling relation, you will get normal scaling. So the fact that m is not, you cannot invert m, is the origin of the anomalous scaling. Okay. So again, now you see that the zero mode, when you try to solve this equation, the zero mode can always add zero mode here. So you have to take it for kappa non-zero, and then take the limit when kappa goes to zero, and then you see that the zero mode appears in C, and are responsible, and will dominate because they have anomalous scaling with a positive rho. Okay. So that's the role of zero. This mechanics of the zero mode, which explain why they are why they dominate the statistic of the scalar, is analogous to what Polyakov tried to do in 2D turbulence. Because in 2D turbulence, he tried to solve the equation of motion, which are of this kind, u dot cat omega equal to zero inside the correction function, by using an operator formalism. So he tried to solve. So what Polyakov did is try to solve u omega is zero inside correlation functions. But this is exactly what we do here. We just solve this equation u grad t, u dot grad at t is zero inside the correlation function. So looking for the zero mode is an analog way, but in that linear problem, as solving the equation of motion without forcing. So it's the same thing. So it's why it's an expression to say that when you look at simple model, it gives you sometimes idea how to solve the nonlinear problem. But it happens that what Polyakov did in 2D turbulence doesn't work, but the idea is more or less the same. Because 2D turbulence, he was doing studying the direct cascade of 2D turbulence, and 2D turbulence seems not to be conformally invariant, I think, probably. Okay. So I think more or less this is what I wanted to say.
Are there more than one zero mode?
There is a collection of zero modes. There are some which dominate. Because when you take the structure function, you have to take the difference of the thing. So they have to be irreducible if they dominate the structure function. So there is only one which dominates the structure function. And then besides the zero modes, then you have a collection of descendants, which are slow modes, means that they grow slower than that. And you can... Yeah? Excuse me? You have to solve this equation and see that there is a... You solve that with that equation. Okay. So that's what we want. So now to compare with 2D turbulence. So it happens that if you look at the same problem, but now u given by the turbulent fluid in two dimensions is an inverse cascade, the passive scalar on vorticity have more or less the same behavior. It's a little bit surprising, just pure numerical computation, but. So one is passive, and the other one is active. They have the same anomalous scaling and this kind of
thing. Same means this same based on numerical evidence.
Yeah,
or
based on the numerical evidence. Okay, now I am a little bit tired. I was planning to explain the explosive nature of the trajectories, but on how they are linked to dissipation. But maybe it's enough, so I can stop.
unfortunately. Yes, may I come back? So the psions, they have to be computed by solving the zero mode equation. But they depend on what input. What do I have to put in? So I'm using the Gaussian distribution. So there's a function going in there, which is the function g.
So the only input is the definition of Mn, which involves the two-point function of the velocity. So the only parameter is the scaling dimension of the velocity.
And space dimensionality.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so these depend. These have some exponent, right? With these. They scale in a particular way.
Yeah. This scale. That was a parameter which I could see. So this scale. Dr.
That was dij actually. Was it initially?
Yeah. So di.
And it's diagonal.
Dij. So it depends on x. So, and it's because the fluid is incompressible, you should have I zero.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
well,
so it's R to the C, and then I don't know by R, but CI. I
see.
Sure. Minus right, okay. Something, okay. Huh? Delta IJ. So it depends on Xi and D.
Yes.
It's explicit. So the Xi and depend on the function of L, C, and D. The formula is a good review. You look at this review of Madame Fish.
And what does the problem have to solve in order to figure out the xions from?
You try to find zero mode which has scaling dimension. Eigenfunction of Mn.
Eigenfunctions of this
Mn. With the scaling
dimension. I remember vaguely there was some non compact group coming in with the thing.
That's for x equal to then from it. When the field is smooth, when c is 2, the field is smooth, then you can use group theory to solve this a problem.
Right.
So that's another story.
Yeah, so
you can do RG,
these
are just the eigenfunctions of the. Yeah, you can do RG. So that's how. So the first few orders were just computed by hand, by equation 1 over d, by us for the Xi perturbation. And then there has been a higher order computation using RG by a group of three persons, I forget.
Linear function of RG.